हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So page 137, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10, 34, 35. Appearing in bodies like those of an ordinary fish, tortoise, and hog, you exhibit activities impossible for such creatures to perform. Extraordinary, incomparable, transcendental activities of unlimited power and strength. These bodies of yours, therefore, are not made of material elements, but are incarnations of your Supreme Personality. You are the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have now appeared with full potency for the benefit of all living entities within this material world. Sutta 2.3.47 Asan tates chavyai chavyatikarana Ashan tate because of imperfection cha not of yati karaha, without bewilderment. Because the jiva is incomplete, he cannot compare with the avatars. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar, by citing the Shastras, demonstrates the jiva's incompleteness. Such imperfect jivas cannot compare with the Lord's avatars. The jiva's incompleteness in terms of size was earlier demonstrated in Vedanta Sutra 2.3.21. Swa Shabdan manabhyam cha, which mentions that scriptures specifically use the word atomic to establish that the jiva is atomic. Atomicity is precisely defined to be 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. Footnote 49. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that the jivas are incomplete since they are atomic. Srila Bhaktivinoda, okay. Sorkas tat kirano jivo nityanu gata vigraha priti dharma chiratma sa paranande pidayabak. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is like the sun. The many individual souls are like the particles of light that come from that Bhagavan sun. Each individual soul has an eternal spiritual form like the form of Bhagavan. Each individual soul is by nature spiritual and blissful. His nature is to love Bhagavan. He is like a son entitled to a share in his father's, Bhagavan's, private property. Bhagavan is like the sun. The rays of light emanating from that sun are the individual spirit souls. These rays of light, individual spirit souls, have a nature like Bhagavan's. Each individual soul has an effulgent spiritual form suited to his own particular nature. You know, the previous conversation. The point is, whatever is the nature, one has the body suited to that nature. So this question of that I want some other form or activity or situation, that's only because we're not the body. So whatever the body is, it's never going to be right for the soul. So because of that, then comes up the idea that I should be able to choose. But the point is it's just according to what one's actual nature is. So because it's a nature, one is satisfied. Right? If one is situated according to nature, so that eternal nature of the soul, that servant nature, then means the soul is going to be very happy in and completely satisfied in whatever is his natural position. Does that make sense? Because this always seems, no, but can we choose? But why do you need to choose who you are? Does that make sense? You are who you are, so therefore, why do you need to choose something else? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like you go for the interview and the guy looks at the paper and says, "Oh, okay, so Mr. Like this. Well, actually, today I'm Humphrey Bogart." You know, like that. Humphrey Bogart. Yeah, I thought it was a little change. You know, yesterday I was Napoleon. You know, so yeah. You know, so it's just, does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is this idea that change, no, it's your nature, and that will, as you uncover, it'll naturally be aware of who you are. That's the self-realization, and being realized in that self, you'll be satisfied there. Mm-hmm. Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah?
But even in the conditioned state, when one doesn't determine one's own nature, then they're completely confused and they're not satisfied at all.
They're not they're confused and not satisfied because they're trying to enjoy in the material world, like that. But if you're engaged according to what is the conditioned nature of the gross and subtle body, then on that platform you'll be satisfied. But you can't satisfy the soul.
So we do have a sky bath and the body according to that position.
Yes, yes, we do have. You know, and so that the point is, as you know, then it comes up, but can we change? Why would you? Why would you need to? Is Mother Jashoda thinking, well, I'm Mother Jashoda and the gopis are a higher rasa, I'd like to be a gopi? Is that, you know?
I guess it's coming from the insecurity in our position in the material world.
Yes, yes, yes.
So then we want to keep our options open.
Yes, so otherwise. It's still, yes. Exactly. So many things you see are that, like the time and space, you know, how the living entity gets it. We project our own position here. It means we're in different situations. It means different bodies here means it's actually different persons.
Yeah.
But for the Lord, different bodies doesn't mean different persons. So we're always, that's always the difficulties. We project our conditioning onto the Lord. Right here. Either, you look at this, right, you either take that or take that. So depending on where this is situated, so that might be too far away, though that might not be. Or you put it here. See? You have to use.
According to the nature.
Yeah. According to the sambandha, yes. You know, how everything is connected. So that's always a weakness, is that we tend to do. That's why then these fine analytical, how you say, development, so that we can start to see the difference. You know, because the whole analytical process is to tell the difference between the soul and material nature and God. But that's what it's for. Because in the spiritual world, they don't need to use the analytical process for that. They'll use the analytical process to see how to use the particular situation in Krishna's service. Right? That's how they'll use it. Otherwise, then there's no need. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just that we're used to that. And so then we by habit, do. So that's why this analysis, then you start to break that habit. Right? But you're replacing it with the proper, how they'll perceive it in the spiritual world. Right? Because there's one vision. It doesn't matter what realm it is, there's still one vision of the Lord. Right? He's the transcendental supreme Lord, we're his servant, we're the soul. And through bhakti, pure bhakti, that's how we're going to please it. You know, and worshipping the Lord is the natural position of the living entity, and through that pure bhakti, that's how we'll please and worship the Lord. So,
yeah.
So there is not differing opinions in that matter. The differences will be in taste. Right? And so that taste is the individual. The individuals have their particular taste. That's what makes them an individual.
Yes.
So, yeah.
No, when we find our nature, it's very easy to surrender.
Yes. Yes. It's very natural. But the point is we can surrender even if because we know the principle of that nature as servant of Krishna. Because that's going to be, any form is going to have that. Mm-hmm. Then it's a specific within that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say if you You know, you say, okay, you're a person of this planet. Okay, and then from that, you know, which continent, which country. You know, it just goes down into detail like that. So one is from the spiritual position, not the material. So that situates you on that side. Right? Then within that, according to the particular taste, that's the realm. And then within that, the specifics of that taste will give the particular rasa. And then within that, your particular, you know, individuality in this. So there's always, it's always going down like that till it gets to the individual. But it's not that you can't put it in groups. So this modern idea where everyone's an individual, you can't make distinctions, can't make groups and all that, then the problem is that there's no community. Their only community is that they all believe that there's no distinction. Right? So you can be talking and they're all individual, but as soon as you mention distinction, now they're one party. Oh, you can't make these distinctions. But otherwise, then they're all making their own. So everyone's distinct from them, and that's why they're unique. How are you unique unless there's distinction? Because if everything's the same, there is no uniqueness. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. It's always balance. Distinction or uniqueness means there's you can tell the difference. And if you're not telling the difference, there's no uniqueness. There's no individuality. So that's the whole thing, is they want individuality without discerning that there is individuality. You know what I'm saying? So you can't put any particular quality to it. Oh, he's like this. Oh, you're putting quality. You're distinguishing. So it's an impersonal philosophy. That everything, there is nothing. It's all just there. But at the same time, we're individual, but we're all just part of this bigger. But it's a real mishmash. You know, it's probably easier to deal with the Mayavadi than this kind of modern mentality, because they don't really have an understanding of their own philosophy. Yes?
It seems that the difficulty with this kind of people is that they don't have a fixed position, they don't have a fixed philosophy, they just shift it constantly.
Yes. It depends upon what the flavor's going on, who said what. You know, somebody, you know, it's just like, let's say, so many quotes are there, you don't remember, but like one that really stuck in this community is, it takes a village to raise a child. Yes. You know, that immediately just sticks, you know. You know, so that's from Africa, and then there might be, before it was, you got things from the Far East, or from, you know, some general, or some poet, or, you know, someone like this that had some kind of position, or some, now it's just, you know, wherever, and then that, you'll make your whole life around that, you know, does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, some anarchists, you know, because they don't follow anything, right? Because they don't like this. At the same time, as you know, they don't follow, they're selfless. Okay? So they're selfless. So now, when they sit down to eat, then they have their hands tied behind their back. All of them. And you have your bowl, and you have this very big spoon. You know, generally what you use is a serving spoon. Right? You know this one?
Yeah.
So then, they can't eat themselves. So, but what they can do is they can take the spoon in their mouth, put it in the food, and feed the persons next to them. Right? So that's selfless. Right? But at the same time, it's a rule, you have to do it that way. So how are they anarchists? Because anarchist means somebody's, you know, eating, you know, like that, you know, someone's rolling around in it on the ground, someone else is throwing it on the walls and licking it off the wall. That's anarchy. You know what I'm saying? But their anarchy is that it has to be their way. Then that's the problem, is that it's so incomplete. So whatever is that place, so they're taking that selfless and then taking it to such an extreme like that. Why can't they just serve prashad, or, you know, if there's, you know, however much is their share with others, or they know someone likes something better and you don't, and so give it to them. Why can't they do these cultural things? But they don't do these cultural things. It's just whatever their speculation is. So you generally see is whenever you have these like anarchists and these others addicted, they have a few things, and whatever it is the flavor of the day for them, that's what everybody's got to do. You know, so it's a real problem. the real problem. So then one sees one's position, 1/10,000th the tip of the hair, you have your natural position. And so by the devotional process, as Lord Chaitanya says, Chaito Dharpa Namarjana, the heart becomes cleansed. And then from there, then one comes up to be that your natural position.
Right? Without philosophy, it's always a problem.
Without philosophy, it's always a problem. And then it's also interesting, then for the philosophy to apply it, you need the religion.
Yes.
Religion is secondary, but it's what manifests the primary, or the philosophy. So you see, is that you know, we see that human life begins with the Tato Brahma Jigyasa, but it also is mentioned human life begins with accepting or following Varnashram. So one's the philosophy, and the other is the religion. So you need both, because otherwise what you see is in general, they'll accept the philosophy, but not the religion. So philosophically, they're human, but as far as religion, then they're not. Right, so it's just natural. Humans use their natural position. Hey, Kamal G. One thing is, when your boys are moving things through the door, you have the door open is good. When you just leave it open, then you understand. Because many times they bring the rickshaw, open the door, then go inside, and then sit down and eat. You know, and then after eating, serve the others, and then do something, and then go back. In the meantime, so many, pilgrims have come for a visit. So it's like they're going to do something. They're like they're bringing stuff here. They're not putting it out there. So bring it here. The door's closed. As soon as it's up, bring it all out there. They close the door. So keep that in mind. Unless you want the pilgrims in checking out what you're doing, because that'll be next. Right? unless you got enough burgers to go around. No? But then you need some chilies. Right? It's a problem, right?
But at least there is culture. They come here, they're so defensive.
They bowed down to Tulsi, then they saw the Sadhu Sangha. So that's there. That's good, but still, these old ones. The other ones come in; they're taking pictures, doing this or that, making a whole scene. Yeah, so. Okay. Each individual soul has an effulgent spiritual form suited to its own particular nature. Each soul's form is effulgent and spiritual, right? So effulgent means effulgence is from good qualities. So someone's effulgent when there's good quality; they're doing something proper. And when they're doing things improper, that's when you see it becomes dark and everything like that. A small part of Therefore, each soul is spiritual in nature. Each soul has spiritual qualities, right? So they have their natural position, and so the body is based on that natural position. We're thinking from here I have the desire. No, it's actually from that position there's the desire. A small particle of love is part of each soul's spiritual nature. Therefore, a particle of love is the soul's nature. Right? Because satchit ananda. So ananda means that interaction, that affection that's there from interaction. Right? Sukha means getting happy by manipulating the situation to what you want. And just that if I'm successful at the jnana and kriya shaktis, I call that happiness. Right? But in the spiritual world, that's the situation in which ananda will be experienced. So it's very different. Right? Therefore, it is said, love is the soul's nature. Because the soul's spiritual form and natural love are both small, it is said that the individual soul's forms and natural love are not perfect or complete. The individual souls also possess a small particle of spiritual bliss. The bliss of realizing impersonal Brahman is described in these words. Right? So that means when you connect to the Lord is complete. But everything needs to be connected. It is connected to Him. So when we realize that, that's when the completeness is there. Right? So what's the problem? You can say, no, but Upanishad says that, you know, everything expanding from the Lord is perfect and complete. It is, if it's functioning in its natural position. Does the internal potency do what it's naturally supposed to do? Does the external potency do what it naturally is supposed to do? Right. So, and the jivas we see following the internal potency does what they're naturally supposed to do. It's the jivas who follow the external potency. She's doing what she's supposed to do, serving the Lord, but the jivas aren't. Therefore, they're not perfect or complete. Right? So that perfect completeness is because of its natural connection with the Lord. He's complete, so everything coming from Him will be complete. The bliss of realizing impersonal Brahman is described in these words of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Brahmanando bhavet esha chet parardha guni kritaha naiti bhakti sudambodhe paramanu tulam api. If Brahmananda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it still cannot compare to even an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. Right? And he's talking from experience. Right? So therefore, it's overrated. Liberation is really overrated. Right? And if it's overrated, then material happiness is... You know, it doesn't even count in the picture here. By his own nature, each individual soul is like a son qualified to inherit this sublimely blissful and most exalted status of engaging in devotional service to the Lord. Aware that the happiness of realizing impersonal Brahman is very small by comparison, the soul becomes Bhagavan's servant and follower. When he is pleased by a certain soul's service, Bhagavan empowers that soul with the powers of his spiritual potencies. Now endowed with that spiritual potency, the soul is able to experience the sublime bliss of devotional service. Tattva Vivek 2.4, right? So that's the empowerment that we're talking about. Not to do something. It's about the tasting Krishna consciousness. That also is there, but you can understand that you have Sat-Chit and Ananda. So if that Ananda aspect is there, it's based in the principle of Sat and Chit. Right? Sat and Chit are the environment. Ananda is then what's experienced. Right? So if you have the experience, means the other two go along with it. But that's the secondary. So we see is that, we'll see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Lord Chaitanya is empowering the devotees to preach and do all these wonderful things. That's within these first two categories. Right? But tasting Krishna consciousness, that's the special. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
So can we say that...
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't mean that the other one's not important. We're just saying sometimes it's just, oh no, it's just about preaching. The point is Lord Chaitanya's mission is about preaching, association, and tasting. It's about three things, not about one. Yes.
That, as you previously explained, that Sukh is connected with Jnana and Kriya, and
yes.
Anand is connected to Vladini Shakti, actually.
Yes.
It's coming from that side.
Yes, yes. Oh. Yes, yes. That's why here you get the reflection of it, because that's the Icha Shakti.
Yes.
That's controlled by Krishna alone. So now, if we're dealing with the Purusha, then we're dealing with the expansion of Balaram. So he's the lord of the Kriya. And then his expansion, Vasudeva, is the lord of Jnana. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then, and unfortunately we're situated in that, but in the connection of the Ajnana Shakti. Right? And so, therefore, we think that if I have a particular situation, I'll be happy. So my endeavor with my knowledge and skills is to manipulate the situation to get a particular transformation that I say will make me happy, right? Hence also the, you know, that reflection of that or the flavor of that, in that I should be able to manipulate things and get what I want in my particular rasa, rather than it's about pleasing Krishna. So if I have that natural affection for Krishna, then it has to have a medium to express it. So as it becomes pure, as it becomes purified to that platform of pure devotional service, then it starts to become clear how that's going to be expressed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not that it's a matter of choice before, it's a matter of natural expression. It's just like, let's say, you've just finished a very, very big lunch. I mean, really big lunch. You know, something special, this and that. Okay? Now, how successful is the exchange when after that, whoever was arranging it, depending upon your particular, cultural situation, but let's say your mother or grandmother asked, what would you like to eat for dinner? Can you think of anything?
No.
No, nothing. Now, when you become hungry, then you start to think of food, and the hungrier you get, the more specific it gets. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point, is that as we get purified and that taste for serving Krishna, that attraction and attachment to Krishna become more and more, then the specifics of what it is becomes more clear. So,
can I repeat the last one? I was going to hear because of that. Can you repeat the last statement? I couldn't hear because of that.
It just means as you're absorbed in Krishna, the more you're absorbed, the more it's clear what is the nature of one's relationship. But if you're not attracted and attached to Krishna, it won't be there. It doesn't, and even if it is, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just like you're so full and we say, oh, we're going to eat this for dinner. It's like, it doesn't matter. You can't appreciate it. You know, give it a few hours and then it starts to, oh, okay. Sri Govinda, is it good?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, so basically it has nothing to do with our material condition.
Nothing.
Whether we work, you know, now in a particular way, and it's like...
Nothing. Yeah, okay. That's what Sahajiyas say. Well, unless you're involved in Grihastha Ashram, you can't appreciate, you know, Radha Krishna's consciousness. That's totally bogus. What does it got to do with our... Because we're not the bodies anyway, so we're the soul, so what does it got to do with that?
Yeah. Because I've heard devotees, they draw parallels and saying, you know, it's all connected somehow, how you deal here, and then it's...
Yeah, what's connected is the attitude. How you're surrendered to Krishna, that's what's connected. But the particular form here is not connected with us. It's connected to the universal form. Universal form is connected to the first, you know, the second Purusha, and third and second Purusha, that's connected to the first. He's connected to Sankarshan, who's connected to Mahanarayan, who's connected to Balaram, who's connected to Krishna.
Okay.
So that's the connection. It has nothing to do with what I'm doing here is what I'm going to be doing there. No, serving Krishna, that's what you're going to be doing. Always hearing and chanting about Krishna and the association of devotees, that will be there. But those situations you're in and this and that, no. You know, you can't say that, you know, this is what it is. And it's because it's not defined by that.
Yeah.
So it's a gross misconception. So the Sahajiyas make that mistake. Like that.
Yeah.
You mentioned about you need to be absorbed in Krishna more and more. So... except for chanting, which other is the second direct devotional activity which can increase one's absorption in Krishna?
Means any of the nine processes. Means hearing and chanting is the first, that's how it starts. Then according to what is your interest and nature, then you are involved. So any of them will create perfection, any one of them. That's why the example is given Sukadev Goswami, Prakrit Maharaj became perfect by hearing, Sukadev by speaking, Prahlad Maharaj by remembering, right? Lakshmi Devi by serving the lotus feet. Then I think it's, what is it? Prithu Maharaj by worshipping, Akrura by prayers, then who's it? Bali? Yeah. By surrender. Arjuna by friendship. And
Ambarish,
no, but he's all.
Hanuman. Oh.
Hanuman by friendship.
Dasya.
Okay, by Dasya. Arjuna by that. Yeah, and Bali Maharaj by that full surrender. And Ambarish is by all of them. Like that. So they're all perfect. So hearing and chanting is the main where we start. From that natural, you remember. It just, it progresses. So hearing and chanting is the main in the association of devotees.
So when you say about these nine different processes,
and when you say about?
These nine different, Shravanam, Kirtan, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pandasya, and all.
Yes.
These nine. And a particular devotee has a particular taste.
Right.
Say in Arjuna. Then can we say that, that may have some connection with his...
With this, does his particular, which of the nine he follows, does that make his particular position in rasa? No. You know what I'm saying? Why do we need to do those? Why do that analytical seek? Because we'll do the analysis and we'll think that that's the advanced position. But that's not. It's faith makes the advanced position. So it has nothing to do with these external points. We always have to try to avoid those things. Otherwise, we're using good intelligence, you know, for stuff that's not so important. You know, otherwise, if that's the position, then who's more advanced? The doctor, the lawyer, or the IT guy? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. You have to... And while they're all there squibbling over, like the industrials will just be smirking on the side. Right? Yes. Shri Govindabhasya. Siddhanta. Because the jiva is incomplete, asantatehe, he has no resemblance of yati karaha with the avatars who are complete. Right? So generally we don't bring this point out. But we do need to, if there's a confusion about the jiva's position and connection with the avatars and the avatari. So then it's brought out. But otherwise, it's not a point that's emphasized. You know, other than the Lord, the soul becomes satisfied in the service to the Lord. So that means they're incomplete without it. Right? The Shruti state the jiva's incompleteness. Balagra sat bhagasya. The jiva is the size of a part of a hundredth part of a tip of a hair. Svetasvatara Upanishad 4.9. The avatars, however, are complete. Purnam adath purnamidam. The Lord is complete, and from him comes the complete avatars. Vaja shaneya yajurveda. Footnote 80. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms that the incomplete jiva cannot be equal to the complete avatars of the Lord. The followers of Dvaita say that the jiva is a bifurcation of Brahman, its reflection or its shadow. Come up with something. Right? Jiva appears in three ways. It is considered sukshma or small simply because of its upadi of intelligence. Jiva is like the sky cut by a sharp tool, like the sun reflected on particles of sand. Or like the shadow created by the sun, right? You say the sky cut by a sharp tool, and you go, yeah, okay, that makes sense. But you can't cut sky. It means space, you know? It's like, yeah, so that's, this is the kind of brain we're working with. Yeah. Wherever there are upadis, there jivas arise as divided entities. This theory also rejects the idea that the senses, like the jiva, are all-pervading. Right? So because if the senses are all-pervading, then that means you would be able to know everything, though there are philosophies that do. But in this one, they're not.
What is the meaning of the jiva is considered sukshma, small, because it is upadhi of intelligence?
Because the upadhi is small. No matter how big we think we are, it's still in the universe quite small. So it's just giving different ways that how this can be there. So The idea is that if there's a designation, they're a separate entity. Right?
You know.
So you see is that here, when there's distinction, then there's individuality. You get rid of the distinction, there's no individuality. You merge in Brahman, right? So interesting in just the modern is that if you have distinction, there's no individuality. So they have two opposing elements as their crux of their philosophy. The other ones at this point may make some sense, but as you go back, it makes no sense. You know, how do you cut sky? You know, stuff like that. But here's just the premise is that you're an individual because there's no distinction. Mm-hmm. But no, you're an individual because there's distinction. That's what's observed. Right? So one may argue that all pervading functions operate within the body. That is not so. Okay. The functions arise from the senses. The function that causes awareness is our senses. It is only a difference in name. Imagining the senses to be all-pervading is meaningless. Shankara in 247. Right, so this will be his position. Like that. Because the function, he's making it, the senses are make you aware.
Yes.
Right? You know, it's just like, so you get the same principle in these modern concoctions where you have a machine, you know, and by the, you know, programming of it, it's able to perceive things around it. Mm-hmm. And because as that develops, that perception of it around it, it develops consciousness. Mm-hmm. And once it develops consciousness, of course, the first thing it has to do is decide that human beings are, you know, a disease and has to be gotten rid of, and so therefore starts all the different, you know, points like that. Because if they just figured out, hey, this is cool, and then they were moved to the humans, but we're better than the humans, then, you know, what fun is that? You know, you have to be able to prove that even though they're so smart, we're better. You know, even though I'm an idiot, I'm still better than everybody else. Right? You know, so, you know, it brings you back to the, what do you call it, the existential kind of thing that, you know, what to do, I'm okay. You know? Does that mean the basis of all the sci-fi things still goes back to Paris? Yes. Yasmin, so, Yasmin Dao Pative Kantariknam, in that Atma are strung the sky, earth, and space. Mundaka Upanishad 225. This refers to Brahman, not the jiva, since the jiva cannot be the abode, right? Okay, so, in that Atma, so then we're understanding that Atma there they're talking about, that's Brahman, right? They are strong, all these different sky, earth, and space. Or it's because of Brahman that sky, earth, and space are going through, and it goes through all the living entities, right? Remember, is that before, as you have whatever is the Bahari Basha Sutra, you have to follow that. You have to bring everything in line with that. So that we understand that the soul is part and parcel of the Lord. So even if the terms are being used, they're common terms like Atma or Brahman, we still have to keep the point that's being made that there's the Supreme Brahman or Parabrahman, and then there's the individual, the Atma, which is Brahman. And so you have to see in that context what qualities belong to Atma, means in the way of the jiva, those are given there, but ones belongs to Brahman, those go there, and you don't mix the two.
Yes, yes, yes.
Is the Paribhasha Sutra for the entire work?
Yes, yes, that's what was explained yesterday. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explained. So he was, you know, before, it's like Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. So this is the Paribhasha Sutra. So everything in Bhagavatam will be explained in connection with that. Does that make sense? Then how you're approaching that, then you have the Chaturshloki, you know, like this, and so. So yes, so you see is that this whole point of that, we're inquiring about Brahman. We're trying to understand the relationship with Brahman. So in somewhere, there'll be some place where that's explained. And then from that, everything else is being brought in line. So in let's say in Upanishad, there's something that is explaining that. And so all the sutras will be seen, all the shlokas will be seen in that light. So that's the difficulty. As you're explaining various aspects, then you're giving different points. Like, you know, sometimes you talk about the completeness, sometimes now here we're talking about the jiva, the incompleteness. So, depending on what it was, but it's all seen in connection with the Lord. Right? So then when you're connected, that's where the completeness, being disconnected, then that's where the incompleteness is. Right? Does that make sense? So it always has to be able to come back to, because it's all Krishna, but it's all different from Krishna. So that's why you'll have some things that look the same and some things that look different. So when the explanation is going in the discussion in the Upanishad, then sometimes in the middle it's saying things that seem to be contradictory if you haven't taken the whole conversation. And so then Shankara and others, then they'll just go in and take which part of the conversation or which word in the conversation they like and then base their philosophy on that. You know, so for them, as you are that, you know, is becomes, while Lord Chaitanya said, no, the Mahavakya is Om. Right? Because Om means the Lord, the living entity in his internal potency. But they try to take others as, you know, so in connection with Om, then therefore when we're dealing with Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, then you understand everything is coming from Krishna. Therefore, having come from Krishna, it has its position in relationship to Krishna. You know, it's just like your hand is part of you. So therefore, that defines what the hand does. Does that make sense? You know, so it's there. And then within the hand, you have the fingers, you have like this. And so everything's defined by its connection. Right? So then if Om is the Mahavakya, that means all else has to be described in relationship to that. You know, in a particular Shastra will bring out a particular aspect. Does that work?
Right? Yeah. Good. So, just to clarify that what we consider in Vedanta Sutra, Paribhas Sutra and Mayavadis, is it the same verse or not?
No. Because there's this, you know, Tattvamasi, like this. So they work everything on that.
Okay.
You know.
So their center is different. They pull it around.
That's why they speculate and try to draw something that's not. Because you see, by these sutras, they're doing this. So Shankara won't comment on all the sutras.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So those sutras that it's very obvious what it is, you know, it means the indirect will be very hard to apply.
Yeah.
You know? How you say, like the guy says, I'll take a grilled cheese sandwich. You know, and you're in a restaurant and he's standing at the counter and he has the money in his hand. It's very hard to say that, well, actually he's buying a ticket, you know, to a, you know, Grateful Dead concert. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that he leaves those sutras. And only the ones that he can play with, then those he will. And then he encourages his followers, like this, you do all of them. So they just become bewildered, because if you're taking one that's so direct and trying to make it indirect, you know, the amount of speculation you have to do, you know. And so it's just like, okay, let us say you have a bunch of theologians sitting in their, you know, how you say, stone monastery, and it's generally somehow or another, and most of them are not in warm places. Okay? Like that. I think that one out in the Sinai Desert, that's when in a warm place.
Yeah.
Like that. So, then you have that thing of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. And that one keeps them busy. The Buddhists, you know, if the tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, doesn't make any sound. Right? But Shankaracharya, he's so kind, he's given so many more, much more variety. And so they keep themselves busy with 500 sutras that they try to play around with. So we see as, the Vaishnavacharyas in their commentaries, so all the six Vaishnav commentaries on Vedanta Sutra, they come on each verse. Like that. So that's the, you know, uniqueness. Well, Shankara doesn't, because you can't. So, yeah. So he's just trying to bewilder them. It's not that he's trying to establish a real philosophy. He's just trying to bewilder them so that they give up the Buddhism. So technically they keep the Buddhist philosophy. They accept the Vedic religion. And now they'll make that connections or how they establish their Buddhist philosophy in the Upanishads and Vedanta Sutra. So like that, that's what he's done. So you can do that where you have one philosophy and another religion or like that. So we see is that, it'll happen. People accept the Vaishnava philosophy, but not the natural Vaishnava religion. His point is, as long as they're absorbed in Krishna, it'll work. But it doesn't mean that it'll be comfortable. You know what I'm saying? Varnashram, it maintains the body. That's what it's for. So you don't follow it, it'll be harder to maintain the body. That's all. It'll be harder to see relationships and dealings and all that. But if you're following Trinadapi Sunichena, that verse, then you're humble, you're tolerant, you're respecting everyone else, you're not looking for respect, so you don't need to have a position, and you're going to be respectful to everyone else anyway, so it doesn't matter that you have to set a hierarchy. Right? You have to set a hierarchy. The guy that has the Vedic knowledge, that's the highest. Otherwise, he's always going to be not the highest. You know what I'm saying? We have a scholar, we have a celebrity actor. Who's in the higher position? Right? We have that academic, we have a big, huge businessman. Who's higher? Or we have, somebody major in the political scene. You know what I'm saying? So you have to set the hierarchy, otherwise people won't follow it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. Even you say is okay, the businessman's higher, but if you have a celebrity actor and you have just a family businessman, he's not big, the actor will be bigger.
Yeah.
Or a politician, he'll be bigger. He's the mayor of, Podunk, Oklahoma. It's like, who's ever heard of the place? Everything will be out of balance. So then you give that this goes out like this. There's a thing. Right? But at the same time, you should respect somebody for who he is. Okay, so this businessman, and then you have the artist. The artist will respect the businessman for being a businessman, but the businessman will respect the artist because he's so big in there. So it just has the natural thing. So, but if you respect everybody, then it doesn't matter if you're following or not. That's how the Paramahamsas are functioning. They don't have to follow Varnashram because the essence of it is this shloka. Right? All etiquette and everything is coming. You follow this shloka, you have all that. That sits you transcendentally. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
How's that going to work? Na danam, na janam, na sundarim. There's no interest in these things. That will put you in the liberated state. Then in the liberated state, then you're interested in serving Krishna. So, ayinanda natana jatinkara. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So just as natural. And even if someone's below Varnashram, if they have these Vaishnava qualities, it'll work. They live their lifestyle, they don't know any different, but they're doing everything for Krishna, always remembering, then it'll work perfectly. But unless those conditions are there, everybody in between those two, that super sincere new devotee and the Paramahamsa, then the Varnashram is to a great advantage. Does that make sense? So then it's a natural, it's a religion, it's secondary to support.
Sometimes Shankaracharya in his commentary, he also mentions philosophy which is equal to the Vaishnava Vedanta. So it's very bewildering then.
He mentions philosophy that's equal to.
Yeah,
why do you say it's equal to? Yes, that means the point is he'll mention these things and we'll quote him on those things. Where he's correct, that's fine, but that doesn't make his philosophy proper.
So he's taking both the sides, that means.
That's just like, let's say, okay, Who's that big guy? I don't know if he's still there. Some Ibrahim in Bombay. Huge dacoit.
Dawood Ibrahim.
Huh?
Dawood Ibrahim.
Yes. Okay, now.
He's bigger.
Huh? He's the biggest. Yeah, he's been for a while. You know? Like that. Okay. Now, let's say he's nice to his mother. He's very respectful of his mother. Every morning he goes in, touches her feet, sees that she's all right, takes care of everything. Okay? So does that now make it that now we do everything that he does? Everything's cool? So the point is what's correct is correct. But that just means it's that part. So why look at his philosophy for that one correct when everything else isn't? When in the Vaishnava philosophy it's all correct. So why look there? What else is he going to do? You understand? What else is he going to do? He's taking from the Veda. It's all talking about Krishna. So sometimes it's a little more obvious and sometimes it's not. So?
He's very strict to bring confusion.
Yes, well that's what he's been asked to do. So he's been empowered by the Lord to bring that confusion.
Yeah.
You know? That's the thing. He's been asked to do that. Because there means the... In other words, they were confused with the Veda. And because of that, they lost all good qualities. And so then Buddha took them away from the Veda. But now they were peaceful enough that now they could be brought back to the Veda. But it would be too much of a jump. So it's step by step. Okay. You know, so then they're following the Veda. They've already gone off track due to the influence of Kali Yuga, their pride and everything. Buddha takes them away. Then a few thousand years, then Shankara brings them back into the Veda, but not the philosophy. Then, Ramanujacharya then comes and brings them back into the proper philosophy. Those who are stubborn and all that are a little bit too, you know, committed to their monism, then Madhvacharya comes with basically, it's presented as if it's exclusive dualism, but it's not, because we saw the other day, he's mentioning something, you can see, they're both there. But like that, to just convince them. And then now the field's prepared for Lord Chaitanya's Yuga avatar to come and give the Yuga Dharma. Right? In its complete form. Before that, Yuga Dharma's always there. You know, it's always been there. They always do kirtan. You see, in all the, they always do kirtan in all the sampradayas, like in Udupi, then who is it? Can't remember. I think he was an outcast or something, so he was he's a pure devotee. And he would sing, so they wouldn't let him in the temple. So he sat behind the temple. Right? That means when you walk into the Udupi temple, the Krishna Math, you come in the main gate, you go into the main thing, and the normal door that would be there is closed. You go around behind the deity, and in a hole in the wall, they have a grate there with 9 holes in it, and that's what you can take darshan of him. So this devotee, is Kanika Das?
Yeah.
He went behind the temple and sat down and started singing. Because of the devotion, the deity turned around and the wall cracked so that he could have darshan. So because of this, now the darshan's that way. So where Kanika's, where his place of sitting, they have a place where for there and the deity. So from there you can see all the way in. So it's about that devotion. That's what's important to the Lord. Yes.
Also, Shankaracharya left that door open singing the
Bhaji Govinda.
And then also the Govindastaka.
Govindastaka, yes, something else. Yeah. He also has that book on Radha and Krishna. Yeah. So he's there, he's hinted at it, like he gave the worship in Guru Vayur. And it's all about Krishna. They have Sangeeta Govinda and all these different things. So the schedule they follow and the procedure is all given by him. But it's far enough out of the way that, you know, no one will notice it except for those who are there. But it's the one place you could go and it'd be all, everything's devotional. Okay.
So those who want to be bewildered, they will. Those who think here, they will.
They won't. They'll come. In other words, if they're sincerely looking and they've come up to the level of Shankara, when they meet the Vaishnavas, they'll accept that. But if they're not, they want to be bewildered, then they won't accept. They'll stay, you know, like that. The point is everybody's doing kirtan. Right? So there, their elephant procession is 3 hours. The night one. They have 5 a day. So the night one, that's 3 hours. And all they're doing is Hare Krishna kirtan the whole time. No joke. There's one group, there's two groups. You know, generally they do. One's doing Hare Krishna, and the other's singing whatever is the local, you know, bhajans and other things. Like that. You know, the Ramanujas do, the Madhvas do, you know, everybody does, you know, because it's the nam. I don't know how you say the Yuga Dharma. Okay. So, okay, so in the Atma are strung to sky, earth, and space. This refers to Brahman, not the Jiva, since the Jiva cannot be the abode. It is said, "You Vadyayan Tanam Sva Shabdat." The Lord is the abode of the heavens and earth because He is the bridge to immortality. Brahma Sutra 131. This is confirmed later with Prana Britscha. The Jiva is not the abode. Brahma Sutra 134. Quote, the Jiva, since He is not all pervading and has upadis, cannot be the abode of earth, the sky and space, Shankara. To take the meaning otherwise would destroy the conclusion of scripture. Right? So they're saying because of upadis He exists. We're saying it's the Jiva, because of His smallness He takes on upadis. So there's going to be common points in anything you're talking about. Like that, wherever it is, but its point is what's the Siddhanta, what's the conclusion? Is that correct? Yes. If we get bewildered by the, you know, certain external things, then there'll always be a problem. But it has to be as though, what's the conclusion? Asantates chavyati kara. Because the Jiva is incomplete, He cannot be compared to the avatars. Brahma Sutta 2.347. Quote, the Jiva is incomplete because He is covered by upadis. Right? So here's it. He cannot be compared. He is incomplete. They're showing here He is covered by upadis. That's why He's incomplete. Right. Thus, according to Advaita and the Vaishnavas, the Jiva is not all-pervading. Pritag upadeshat. Knowledge in the Jiva is eternal because of teachings in the scriptures. Brahma Sutra 2.326. Right? Because we saw Why that point is because you see that those following Shankya philosophy, they're saying the Jiva is all pervading. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, and some of the others. So therefore, you get rid of that. Mm-hmm. So there may be commonality there, but it comes up as for the Advaitins, they're common up to Brahman platform, but beyond that, they're not. So therefore, their system is very difficult because of not actually understanding what's beyond. You're doing something just because you're supposed to be doing it. That's harder than doing it because you know why you're doing it.
I think they also have very difficulty in accepting the size of the Jiva.
Yes. So there's always that, the size, the, you know, pervading. That's all these different things are just ways you can go, you know, the time and space and all this. They get off on all these. Madhva quotes from the Kaushika Shruti in this regard for proof. Bhinno chintyau paramo Oh, it's one of those. Okay. The Lord and His avatars are different from the Jivas and inconceivable. He is supreme and complete. The Jivas are incomplete. Because I am eternally liberated, He desires liberation from bondage. Right, because the soul, by nature, the situation of themselves is they're eternally liberated, but because of the polluted consciousness, they're identifying with matter, and so that's why they want liberation from this identification. But they have to come back to that they're the soul, the servant of the Lord. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:24, 2, 3, 5, and 6. What was the purpose for which the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepted the abominable form of fish? Exactly as an ordinary living being accepts different forms under the laws of karma. The form of a fish is certainly condemned and full of terrible pain. O my Lord, what was the purpose of this incarnation? Kindly explain this to us, for hearing about the pastimes of the Lord is auspicious for everyone. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, for the sake of protecting the cows, Brahmins, demigods, devotees, the Vedic literature, religious principles, and principles to fulfill the purpose of life, the Supreme Personality of Godhead accepts the forms of incarnations. Like the air passing through different types of atmosphere, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although appearing sometimes as a human being and sometimes as a lower animal, is always transcendental. Because he is above the material modes of nature, he is unaffected by higher and lower forms. Right? So he doesn't suffer that it's a lower form, so therefore there's pain and all this. He's transcendental all the time. Footnote 81. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the word Eva should be added to other phrases describing Matsya so that the meaning becomes as if in tamaguna and as if intolerable. The Lord took the form of a condemned beggar. Right, so it's given in one of the phrases, so it should be used also in the others. Because just as he says, just is, as if, then after that is he describing it that it is, but it's in the context of as if. Right? The Lord took the form of a condemned beggar to give mercy to his devotee Bali. If this case is similar, then I want to know to whom the Lord gave mercy by accepting the condemned form of a fish. Because right? It's by his incarnation as Vamanadeva, then Bali got mercy. So who got the mercy when he came as Matsya? Because then it's about the relationship of the Lord and the devotees. The activities of the famous Lord give joy to the world because those activities are glorified and heard. To which devotee did the form of Matsya give joy? This verse rejects the idea that the Lord has a condemnable form by making a comparison. Though the Lord moves through species which are higher and lower by their intelligence and qualities, as the Antaryami, he does not take part of their higher or lower nature, since he is beyond the gunas. What is the question of the forms like Matsya being superior, inferior, since they are Shuddha Sattva? This is Sridhar Swami's remark. Sardartha Darshani 8, 24, 3, and 6. Sutta 2, 3, right? So now you're showing that there's a difference, right? So because otherwise they're saying we're the same. So you have to say there's a difference. But it also, remember, they're also saying is they're the same, and at the same, and but as Brahman has come in the mode of goodness as the avatar, so it's not transcendental. So you're going to have to deal with two points: the soul and the Lord are not the same, and you're going to have that the Lord is transcendental, not situated in the mode of goodness. He's in pure goodness. Right. So this order has been taken. That now they've taken describe the difference that's there, because that's the first. Because if you say that there's a difference, there's okay. Well, then I'm Brahman. I'm not this. No, it's just first of all, you're not Brahman. You're not part of Brahman. You know, on any level. And once that's established, then the Lord is transcendental. So you're the jiva that's not the Lord, and the Lord is transcendental, and you're not.
Yes. Also, like, they say that, okay, Lord in his abode may be transcendental. When he comes here, he has to be like us, so...
Yes, yes. So, you know, whatever, all these different misconceptions come up like that. Okay, Sutra 2.3.48. The author criticizes in the reasoning that equates the avatars and jivas. Abhasha eva cha. Abhasha, fallacy. Eva, indeed, cha, also. There is a logical fallacy in equating the avatars with the jivas. Sutta Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains that the usage of the word amsha for both the jiva and the avatars does not entail that the two are equivalent. The word amsha, when directed to the avatars such as Kurma, Matsya, etc., simply means that they don't manifest all the qualities of the Lord, whereas when directed to the jiva, it implies the jiva's dependence on the Lord due to his incompleteness. Right? So one is they don't manifest the qualities. That's why they're an amsha. The other one, they don't have the qualities. Right? Or they're dependent in the manifestation of those qualities. Right. It will be proved later in Vedanta Sutra 337. Antar yatatvam shabdad iti chen navisheshat. That in the Supreme Brahman there are many eternal forms, as in the Vaidurya gem. The Lord endowed with all these forms is complete and pure. Sometimes it reveals all the qualities, and sometimes not all of them. Hence, the faulty logic by the opposition is herein criticized. Footnote 82. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura refutes the impersonalist conception that the jiva is Brahman. Atava jiva chintayam jatam sarvam jagat dhruvam jiveshvare nabhedho sti jiva sarveshvareshvaraha. Some other philosophers say, this material world is born from the soul's thoughts. In truth, the individual soul is not different from God. The individual soul is himself the God of all gods. So if that's the, point is, if God's thinking of all these things, then why do we say it's not real? And why does the jiva have to come back to that? If it's God thinking about it, let's say you're daydreaming. Is it a problem? Is it an anxiety that the persons in the dream are trying to get back to you? No, it's you having the date. So it means if that's it, then, where's the question of them being any difference or any illusion or anything? So that there is, then they have to understand is therefore they're dealing with something different. Some other philosophers do think this theory of pretending is true. They say, the pretending that the material world is not manifested spontaneously from nothing. Brahman first pretends that it is the individual soul, then it pretends that the material world exists. How can the individual spirit soul be something different from Brahman? It cannot. If it is said that the soul is different from Brahman, the philosophy of impersonalism would be killed at once. Therefore, the individual spirit soul is the pretending of Brahman. These philosophers eventually divided into two groups with two different philosophies. So they're impersonalists, but now they have two philosophies. Right? The first of these groups says Brahman is like a great sky. The individual soul covered by illusion is like the small portion of the sky within a clay pot. When ignorance cuts Brahman into tiny pieces, these pieces are the individual souls. In that way, the soul and Brahman are different. Right? Though they're not, but they hear like that. End quote. The second group of philosophers argue against this idea, saying, this idea is an embarrassment to Brahman. For this idea says that Brahman can be cut into pieces, and also that Brahman itself may be overpowered by illusion. The truth is not like that. Please know that the individual spirit soul is like a reflection of Brahman. But what is reflected on, that's the whole, is a reflection of Brahman. The individual spirit soul is like the sun or moon reflected on the water. The individual soul is an illusion, and by him the illusory material world is imagined to exist. In truth, only Brahman exists. There is nothing but it. The individual soul is not different from it, and neither is the material world different from it. Right. So then they're trying to put it back to there, trying to give some, proper grace there. A great blunder rests in both these philosophies. A blunder blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. These philosophies have neither the desire nor the power to see. Right? They don't want to see. They're happy with their impersonal philosophy because you can be God. It's just like in the material world, does somebody want to be great? They had the opportunity to be the most powerful, have the six opulences to the greatest degree of anyone else, they would take it. Right? So, like that. So that's why they don't want to know that they're not God. And so any philosophy that'll show that they're God, they're quite happy. It's just a matter of how far in the logic they'll take it. So one group will just go up to one point. Next group says, no, that's not there. They'll take it to a farther point. You know? But the whole point, yeah. But yeah, so we're analyzing here. The blunder is their idea that Brahman alone exists and there's nothing but it. If they do not accept that Brahman has inconceivable power, then all their ideas are worthless. Right? Because otherwise, Brahman's reflected on what? There's only Brahman. So if it's there, then if Brahman is real, therefore, and you're reflecting it on Brahman, the reflection would also be real. Right? But they're trying to get this illusion. That means there has to be power. So there's energy. So there's Brahman and energy. Right? So that even though it's one, there's two aspects. So they're missing this point. If you're going to get the jiva, if you're going to be illusion, illusion is cutting. Where does the illusion come from? Sorry? But where does any of that come from if there's just nothingness? It's just like if we have this huge, let's say we have this huge warehouse. In this warehouse, there is absolutely nothing. Right? And then we're going to advertise that on Black Friday there's going to be some good prices.
There's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, what are they talking about?
Nothing.
Yeah.
And even when they say about the reflecting surface, so the reflecting surface has to be either equal to the object or has to be greater than the object. So that means they're saying that something else is equal to Brahman or greater than Brahman. So then
Yes.
Well, I suppose you should ever see it like pretending.
Pretending.
Yes,
they're all pretending because the point that none of these philosophies that Vedanta Sutra is dealing with, do they address the premise that it's an illusion that the living entity thinks I'm the controller and I'm the enjoyer? They leave that premise in place. Because by becoming God, you're the controller, and Brahmananda, I'm the supreme enjoyer. So they're all like that. And the karmis is I'm controller, I'm the big demigod, and I will enjoy from that. Right? So they don't address the material consciousness. That's why they will never actually get out of the material world. They may leave the specific universe, but they won't leave Mahatattva. They won't leave Sutra. They have to remain within Sutra. And only when Sutra is dissolved, then they'll go back into the Lord. You know, while the Lord is sleeping. And when he breathes out again, then they'll come out again. Right? So their individuality remains. It's just that they're not accepting. They're either accepting it in connection with karma or not accepting it in connection with liberation. So they don't address. So none of the philosophies accept that. So you'll always find that weakness. So that's why it'll come up. You know, that's why they want to be God, because then they'll think they'll enjoy. You know, like I said, I went down to the local theater, the amateur theater, and they said that I was useless at acting. So therefore, because, you know, I'm useless at acting, therefore, you know, I'm going to go to Hollywood and get an Academy Award. You know, I can't be God as a karmi, so now I'll be God as a jnani. You know, it's just like, what are they talking about? So, yeah. If they do not accept that Brahman has inconceivable power, then all their ideas are worthless. Some talk of maya, illusion, others talk of avidya, ignorance, others talk of pretending, and still others talk of pretending to pretend. Right? You even see the Buddhists that, you know, some, it exists, but, you know, it's not so important. Others, it may or may not exist, but we don't care. Others, where, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's say, how you say, what is it? What was the third one? Because the fourth one was nothing exists.
It may exist and that may not exist.
May not exist, but then there's that one in between. There's something in between.
It may be, it may be not.
Yeah, but there were four levels. Right, these are the Buddhists, the four kinds of Buddhists. So you had those that said nothing exists, the nihilists. So there's no soul, there's no anything, there's nothing to deal with. So it's just deal with it that there's nothing to deal with. Right?
One said that the objects are real. Second said the thoughts are real. Then the ideas are real, and then nothing is real.
Oh, the objects, the thoughts.
Objects, thoughts, ideas.
Ideas.
That's cognition.
And then nothing. Yes. So like this, that you have all these different kind of levels of how you approach it, depending on the flavors. So. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanandini.
Jai.